Good morning, everyone. I'd like to convene this meeting of the Education Finance Committee. Welcome. We have two bills on the agenda today. But before we do that, as we do have a quorum, Representative Pryor, good morning. Would you like to move the meeting, or excuse me, move the minutes from our February 19th meeting?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes from our February 5th, the last meeting.
The last meeting, you got it. The minutes that are in your packet. Thank you, Representative Pryor. Any discussion to the Pryor motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all. First bill on the agenda today is Representative Freiberg. Welcome to the committee, House File 116. Copy is in your packet, and you've already visited education policy with this bill. Am I remembering correctly?
Correct.
Thank you very much. Representative Joachim, would you like to move that House File 116 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Representative Joachim. Representative Freiberg, with that, to your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 116 is an important bill that would put school districts on equal footing as far as the with cities and counties as far as the process they use with their operating levies. Currently, when they are renewing an expiring referendum, operating referendum, even if it's at the same amount, they have to go to a vote of the people. When cities and counties have similar things going through, they're just, you know, their elected officials are entrusted to represent the people of their jurisdictions, so they do not have to do that. So this bill would make it so that school boards, which are the elected bodies representing school districts, have the same authority, and the education of the students in those districts is not jeopardized by a potentially adverse vote that really doesn't need to occur, especially when they're when the taxes are not being raised beyond what they are. So the bill has wide support from a variety of educational organizations. It includes the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Education Minnesota, the Minnesota School Boards Association, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Minnesota Rural Education Association, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and Schools for Equity in Education. I think it's a great bill. I appreciate the committee's considering it, and I do have a few testifiers.
Oh, thank you very much. Let me get to my cheat sheet and see if I know who they might be.
I believe the first one is Kathy Green, who's from Austin.
Oh, thank you very much, Ms. Green. I hope you drove up last night. An excellent choice. Ms. Green, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Catherine Green. I'm from Austin, Minnesota. And thank you, Representative Dabney, for having me here today and for the rest of the committee for being here in the snowy day. Being a school board member, I am most aware of snow days. So, yes. Safety first. First of all, I'm from Austin, Minnesota. I've served on our school board since 2000. I'm currently serving in my fifth term. I'm also the immediate past president of the Minnesota School Boards Association. I'm here to support House File 116, allowing school boards the authority to reauthorize levies that have been put in place by our voters of our district. And just as a little bit of an explanation of what kind of school district I'm representing, along with the 332 school districts across the state, Austin is a minority-majority district. We have over 65% of our students are students of poverty on free and reduced lunch. We speak over 52 different language and dialects in our district. We are a very diverse district, and we are outstate. First of all, the history of levies in our district. Since 1994, we have had seven levies in our district. Four of them were initial levies, operating levies, and three of them were renewals of existing levies. As an experience, in 1994, that levy failed, followed by three passing levies. Then in 2009, we had a renewal of a levy that we actually tried to increase the levy at that time. That levy failed. We came back to the voters, and the renewal was a pass. So it did pass, and then it was followed in 2013 by another renewal of a levy in place. We are elected officials as school board members, and we're probably the most, as far as if a voter wanted to oust an elected official, I would say that school boards are the bodies that are most reactive in that case, where voters do. We see our constituents in the grocery store. We see them at our basketball games, our football games, our soccer games. We see them at PTC meetings. So if they have an issue with education, which is central to most people's hearts, they do go to the ballot box. And so as far as being transparent, if we were going to renewal as a voting action on a board, it's very transparent. It would be on an agenda. There would be public meetings prior to an action item taking place. So people know what the school boards are doing within their communities. Once again, it wouldn't be a matter of raising taxes. It would be supporting established programming and taxes that are already in place. And one of the things when we were looking at, I was talking to my superintendent yesterday, and last week there was a meeting of the superintendents of the Big Nine representing predominantly southern Minnesota. And their comment, and it was unrelated, they did not know I would be here today. They had a conversation relating that their operating levies are actually covering a vast majority of their cross subsidies for special education. So where there's a shortfall of supports from our state and national government regarding special education, the levies that are in place are filling in that gap. It used to be, and originally the operating levies were put in place for supposedly extras in districts, and now they are supporting the core of what we are doing in our classrooms. And so it's important that we have those in place. I guess I'm just sitting here to say that a lot of effort goes into running a levy. It needs to take, you'll be hearing from a parent, it needs to take going into the community and finding people that are actually wanting to serve on committees, because we as school board members, we cannot go out and we don't do the committee work behind a levy. That's done by constituents. They're extremely expensive, and so you're asking for money from people that are already supporting things in so many ways. And so anyway, as a matter of kind of preserving resources within the district, we've gotten experience that our constituents are supportive of us once the levy is in place, knowing and they've been educated why the levy is in place, that let us as fiduciaries within our districts, as governing agents, as elected officials, give us the authority to continue to support our students. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Representative Freiberg, I have next on the list Ms. Johnson,
I believe it is.
Mr., my apologies. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and committee members. My name is Sheridan Johnson. I'm with the Anoka-Hennepin Parents Vote Yes from our levy referendum in 2017. Here in support of House File 116. Thank you for allowing my testimony today. My wife and I led the Anoka-Hennepin Parents Vote Yes efforts in support of our capital and operating levies in 2017. It was a critical campaign for our district, providing funding for significantly overdue infrastructure and learning environment improvements. It was critical for improving our class sizes and ensuring learning opportunities for all of our students. I myself am the product of public education in Minnesota. I grew up in Hawley, Minnesota, with about 52 other students. Just a little smaller than Anoka-Hennepin's 3,000 graduates will have this year. After graduation, I went to the University of Minnesota, obtaining bachelor's and master's degrees, and now live in Anoka, where my sixth and second graders attend school. Growing up in Hawley, I saw the value of those community members who seem to always be where the action is, where their time and leadership and talents are needed. When Anoka-Hennepin School Board began discussion on the proposals that led to our 2017 vote, there was a call for community members to investigate and learn about the needs of the district. As a cost-conscious member of the community myself, I wanted to learn as much as I could to understand if I would support that. I wanted to know if the school board was already making good of the resources that they had available, or if I wanted to vote no. Dozens of hours in meetings with over 30 other community members, we learned enormously valuable information on this issue. At the end of the investigation phase, the board decided to move to a formal proposal and ask the public for a vote. In our district, with over 40,000 students and over 200,000 residents, no one stepped up to help push for a vote yes effort. My wife and I have literally spent hundreds of hours each school year volunteering in our Anoka-Hennepin schools. We knew we couldn't sit this out. An organized effort was absolutely necessary to gain support and cross finish line with a yes vote. Over the years, these types of votes have become too common. The state funding needed for education has continued to lag behind. In Anoka-Hennepin alone, over 14% of our $500 million annual budget is funded through voter-approved levies, and our funding per student is right at the state average. Without these approved dollars, it would be the equivalent of educating over 6,000 students in our district with zero funding. Getting these levies approved is critical, and it requires significant resources and efforts on the part of parents, the community, and the district, regardless of what zip code the referendum occurs, whether it's Minneapolis or Little Falls or Anoka or Holly. House File 116 would allow a school board, those community members already elected to their seats, to renew an existing referendum. Referendum campaigns are expensive, time-consuming, and ripe for outside influences to try to drive a negative vote. We were lucky in Anoka-Hennepin to avoid that type of outside influence. Our community support was strong, and the vote was successful. Other school districts have not had that same experience. We vote our school board members into office just as all of you are elected, to represent our positions on school policy and budgeting decisions. I believe this bill falls squarely within those responsibilities to ensure consistent and continuously improved education for all within our public schools in Minnesota. Please support House File 116 to empower those elected to represent us on our school boards to make the best decisions possible for our students. Thank you, and I stand available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Appreciate that. Representative Freiberg, next on my list is Superintendent Lennox from the Mountains View District. Superintendent, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Chris Lennox. I am Superintendent of Schools from the Mountains View Public School District. Chair Dabney, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I am here to testify in support of House File 116. Over the last 5 years, 100% of the no-increase levy renewals have passed. That's 82 out of 82 across the state. Now, not only have these renewals passed, they've passed by 2-to-1 and 3-to-1 margins. They haven't really even been close. And I bring this up today because this fall, in my district, Mountains View Public Schools, we will have an expiring levy. Our intention is to renew that levy at no increase. Under current law, we'll be required to hold an election. And it would be important for you to know that Mountains View actually has two levies that were approved by our voters. And since their original approvals, both have subsequently been renewed at no increase. So this fall will mark the third time we will be asking our voters to approve the same levy at the same amount. Now, in conversations with our community, I've come to understand this confuses people. Voters believe that we're asking them to go back to the polls to cast a vote, then there must be something new. There must be an increase. And when I try to explain this to them, they're skeptical. Their question is, why would we have to go back and vote if nothing's changing, if there's no increase? Why would we need to vote again if we've already said yes to that levy? Well, that's a good question, and House File 116 could change that. You see, to date, my answer to our community has been that state statute requires school districts to hold elections when levies expire, even when we're asking for no increase. And it's important for legislators to recognize that while certainly these elections have financial and labor costs, there's also a political cost. Make no mistake that forcing districts to hold elections on no increased levies reinforces the perception that schools are constantly out asking for more money. Now, this is especially troubling for districts who are trying to do the fiscally responsible thing and hold the line with no increase. I also want to point out that both students and parents have come to expect the programs and services that are being provided through these local levies. In going to an election, you create the need for districts to identify what will be lost if the levy should not be successful. For example, this fall in Moundsview, our renewal is for a $535 per pupil levy. Now, with over 10,000 students, that's more than $5.35 million that would be lost should that not be successful or renewed. But the district isn't looking to take that away from our students, our families, our parents. We don't want to lose programs and services. But when districts try to articulate what that loss might mean, the public often pushes back, claiming that's scare tactics. The dialogue can degenerate, become negative and divisive. But with the passage of this bill, that wouldn't be necessary. School districts would be able to maintain a focus on what we will provide for students, not what would be lost. House File 116 would add a measure of stability to the budgeting process for school districts. It would allow us to plan for and provide the programs and services our communities have come to expect. And the best part, because these are locally approved levies, there is no cost to the state budget. I implore you, give school boards this authority. Allow them local control. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent. I believe there's a question for you, sir. Yeah. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Superintendent, for being here. Is your levy question include an inflationary provision?
Mr. Chair?
Superintendent Lennox.
Representative, no, it does not. There is no inflationary increase in our current levy.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Superintendent Lennox, if your renewal fails, you would still be able to levy because we've already given you authority for $724 per pupil.
Superintendent Lennox?
Representative Chair Devaney, yes, that is absolutely true, Representative. This money is in addition to that and is part of the ongoing budget that our district has put together over multiple years, and we want to make sure we're sustaining that those programs and services that we're currently providing, and again, our parents and students have come to expect.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Superintendent Lennox, when you read the bill, do you think there's adequate notification for parents that you're going to add a board meeting? And I know you're the superintendent, the board is your boss, but that the board will make this determination? Because I see nothing in the bill that really says, other than a resolution, that ahead of time the taxpayers would be notified that the board is going to take this action, or at least they're considering this action. And also, I don't see a provision for what if that vote fails, that you have board members who decide they're not going to move forward. Do you think there needs to be language in this proposal that would also require that this vote could only be taken once during the year, for example?
Superintendent Lennox.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure about the number of times or the vote could or could not be taken relative to that. I would suggest in terms of information to the public, similar to holding an election, we would absolutely provide all information about what the levy is providing, the amount of money, publicly present all of that factual information as we are required now. We continue to do that. And without speaking for all boards across the state, I would suggest that at least in Moundsview, we wouldn't entertain a vote like that unless we were confident in terms of support from the community and what we were attempting to do, anticipating a positive outcome for that.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you.
I think Representative Freiberg wants to respond as well, Representative Erickson.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Representative Erickson. Line 1 point, just to the first part about the notification, you know, this is similar to the notification that cities and counties send out. Lines 1.16 and 1.17 say that they have to adopt a resolution authorizing the renewal after holding a meeting and allowing public testimony on the proposed renewal. So, you know, the information about the levy is published to the public in the way it regularly is, and it also is for cities and counties. And as far as limiting the number of votes, I don't believe cities and counties have any sort of artificial limit in that manner, and I guess I don't see why you would have that. I mean, presumably, unless there's an interceding election and the composition of the board changes, I don't anticipate multiple votes being a regular occurrence in any way. I don't think cities and counties have any sort of limitation like that in place either.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's just this one last question.
Thank you.
Representative Freiberg, I think that you need to reread those statements, though, because they're too vague. And if this bill's going to go forward, there has to be much more specificity here for the taxpayers. So I would suggest that what you referred me to in line 1.16 and 1.17 does not fulfill the information that the taxpayer needs to know ahead of time when you're considering this. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. Mr. Johnson said that the referendum in Anoka represented 14% of the budget, and Mr. Lennox talked about $5.35 million being raised. What percentage of your operating budget, Superintendent, does that $5.3 million represent? And Ms. Green, talking about Austin, Minnesota, too, I wonder what percentage of the operating budget that operating referendum represented.
Superintendent, did you bring a calculator along today?
Mr. Chair, working that out right now.
I was offering him mine.
Thank you.
If the pages could pull a chair over for Ms. Green, please. She can join the table. Mr. Johnson, you're doing great right where you are.
Representative, that for us, that is just over 4%.
Oh. Representative Sandell? Or excuse me, Ms. Green, do you have that calculation for the Austin Public Schools?
I don't. I do know that it's approximately $750 per student, so it's significant.
Thank you. Representative Sandell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Representative Yuking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick question, maybe to both Superintendent Lennox and Board Chair Kathy Green. So are you on a 2 or 4 year cycle for your school board elections?
Ms. Green, do you want to take that one first as a school board representative?
It is a 4 year cycle. I believe that's statewide, in that board members serve for 4 years. We have elections every 2 years.
Superintendent Lennox, is that the same in the Moundsview district?
Chair, Representative, yes, that's the same.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Yuking,
are you both even or odd year? I know half the districts are even, half are odd. Which ones are you?
Ms. Green?
We are even, and statewide, I think it's in excess of 90% of the districts are on even years, and that's because then it saves the district money from having to run an election on our own on some years.
Superintendent Lennox.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are odd year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hadn't realized the percentage had gotten so high. I have one of each in my school district. I just wanted to point out that I know folks are concerned about the board being able to take this action. I think the language in 1.16 and 1.17 actually is strong enough, but maybe Representative Freiberg will look at to make it more of a must than, maybe it sounds too permissive. I don't know. But from my experience, especially after serving 9 years on a city council, local electeds are the closest to the people. And they're really respectful and responsive to what their constituents want, because they're the ones that run into you in the grocery store every day, on the street, in front of your sidewalk, taking walks, in the park. They're out in our communities a lot more sometimes than we are, unless we live down here. And I know when the city councils, when they lightened the requirements around truth and taxation meetings for city councils, 90-some percent of city council still held them because they wanted to hear from their community members and find out where they were at on their budget. So, and as Superintendent Lennox said, you wouldn't go forward without a levy unless you were pretty confident that your community supported it. So I do have some faith in that local control. I always have. Hopefully I always will. They are closest to the people, and I really would encourage folks to take a hard look at this because I think it's putting our schools on unequal playing ground when it comes to local governments and the ability to address what their local taxpayers need. And if the taxpayers aren't happy, that's what elections are for. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Any other questions for this panel? Seeing none, Mr. Bartholomew? You'd contacted staff requesting to testify? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns with House File 116. The school referendum process, including renewals, creates an opportunity for school boards and their citizens to have a conversation about strategies, results, and funding. For example, referendums have been requested for strategies such as reducing class sizes, providing early education services, hiring student support personnel, implementing new curriculum and professional development, and compensating for declining student enrollment. In each case, school boards can describe what they're currently doing, what they'd like to do, and how the new funding will make a difference for students. By the same token, citizens can ask about the strategic direction their schools want to take, how the additional funding will be used, and expected results. These are critical discussions for schools and their communities to have. Our concern with House File 116 is it changes the dynamic of these local conversations by giving the school board and not citizens the final say in whether a referendum levy should be continued or changed based on the results of the strategy funded by the referendum or if community needs have changed. The state already has given school boards flexibility to raise additional funds through changes like local option revenue. One alternative to House File 116 is to improve referendum equalization rates. We ask that you not proceed with House File 116, which shifts to a hearing process prior to renewal of a property tax. While this may be easier for school boards, it reduces the role of citizens by taking away their vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. This is a public hearing. Is there any member of the public present who wishes to testify either for or against House File 116? Mr. Heller. And as Mr. Heller comes down, there is a letter from the Minnesota Farm Bureau in members' packets as well. Mr. Heller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony regarding House File 116.
Thank you, Chair, for allowing me to testify in the Finance Committee on the 19th of February. My name is Rick Heller, unofficial represent the twice exceptional people with print disabilities found on the House File 1370. Regarding this voting piece, it's critical that people go to the voting booth. And to allow now a switch and bait, now that the voters can't weigh in with the public, not to mention if, through the chair, if the last person from the school district there would want to come down and yield to a question. School boards do not have captioning, nor are they required to have captioning. So based on 8A, they're not fully communicating with those people, the little people that you see that come to school board meetings. The deaf are not getting that on their with their TV. And once again, we want people to go to the ballot. That's frankly a civic responsibility to go and vote. We are taking that away. I ask those that are signed on to this bill to take their name off of it or allow an option that allow people to go and vote and be more engaged, because now people will not be engaged in the process when the school boards are making the decisions alone. Even though they can vote them out, we want immediate feedback, not that school boards are making decisions through a school board member or members. It does a disservice to the public, once again, that not wanting them to go to know that when they vote, their vote matters. Now we're leaving it up to a smaller group. And once again, if they're not even, school boards are not even meeting the captioning requirement and don't have to, isn't there time for potential requirement that school district apply Minnesota Statute 16E.03 Subdivision 9 on web accessibility for the people that are blind and print disabled, found in a Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008, which are 18 and over voters? Something to think about. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 116? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if I could call Mr. Papp down. I know he submitted a letter, but I'd love to
certainly
have that opportunity.
Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Kevin Papp. I'm a corn and soybean farmer in Blue Earth County, by Crystal Walk Memorial School District, president of Minnesota Farm Bureau, that represents nearly 30,000 member families. And I have submitted my letter. We're not sure about how the weather was going to turn out, so I appreciate this opportunity to answer questions.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming up and testifying, Mr. Papp. So, and Representative Freiberg, thank you for the bill. I mean, I understand what we're trying to solve here, and I've heard both sides listen to this for the 7 years that I've been in. And the one thing that I keep hearing at the core of this is, if you're elected as a legislator, you're elected as a school board member, our first and primary job is to listen. And I understand the ease of this, of saying, well, we just put it on the school board, they get elected and so forth, but we still have to listen during our tenure. And so to that, Mr. Papp, I would say, I mean, I hear this all the time, the changing dynamics of your industry and the people you represent. This is probably one of the biggest things I hear about every single year from my constituents. Can you explain to us what the environment has been like, how it's changed, and how not having this ability or having this ability would affect the members that you represent?
Mr. Papp.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know, certainly from a Farm Bureau standpoint, I think everybody, whether you're a rural community or any place in the state, investing in our education is critically important to the future, not only of that community, but the entire state. And agriculture wants to be at the table. We do feel, though, however, that this needs to be an open, transparent process. Whether it's something like this, regulations, things like that, we feel it's important to have everybody at the table to talk through those issues, to have, you know, not only skin in the game, but to have buy-in and understanding and doing that way. I certainly appreciate all the hard work by school districts, by those involved. I've come from a school district, quite frankly, where we had not an operating referendum, but we had a referendum fail 6 times. It was the 7th try before we got something that worked for the entire district. I understand and appreciate all the time and effort and cost that it takes to do this, but we really feel this is an important process, an important part of that.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, and one more. And Mr. Papp, if you could just explain, and people may be familiar with this, but when you're in a high-density business district, the difference of that and the burdens on the industries there versus in a high agriculture district that we see in many districts, what are those burden shifts like, and how do you see this affecting that?
Mr. Papp?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kreisha, it is a I don't want to use the word burden. It is an investment that we make in property tax. It's significant as we look at some sorts of education investments. We're fortunate on operating levies to be compared to many others that own. But it is an investment. It's an important investment. It's a big part of our expense, real estate taxes, and certainly schools are part of those real estate taxes. But it's a process that we want to be involved in, a process we think it's important that we have those opportunities to have those discussions and have those votes.
Representative Freiberg, you wanted to respond as well?
Sure. I appreciate the comment. I'm certainly not an expert on agricultural tax classifications, but my and perhaps the fiscal staff here could explain it a little bit more, but my understanding is farmlands do not pay in the operating referendum, the house, garage, one. This came up also in education policy, so I've learned a little bit, although I'm still very far from an expert in this topic. But my understanding is the house, garage, and 1 acre pays the tax, but ag lands do not. I'm sorry, I'm probably doing a bad job explaining it, but maybe fiscal.
Well, how about if we punt it over to Mr. Fromm?
Thank you.
Please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, as Representative Freiberg says, for the operating referendum, the tax base for that levy is referendum market value, and that's the market value of the property, taxable property in each district, excluding two classes. It excludes the seasonal recreational property, and it excludes the ag lands, the farm lands. It does, however, include the house, garage, and 1 acre. So a person living on a farm, the house, garage, and 1 acre would pay the operating referendum tax just as a business would in the community or a person who lived in the town. The Mr. Papp spoke of the debt service levy for the new building in the district where his farm is at, and that levy falls against all property on tax capacity, including farmlands. So buildings essentially are paid for by farmlands as well as other classes of property. The operating referendum goes against referendum market value, which excludes ag lands.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Creshaw.
And thank you for asking the fiscal staff. So Representative Freiberg and to the committee members, I think here's the hard thing. What your bill does and what you're proposing to do has incredible merits of what we're trying to do in the education. The perception change we run into, and Mr. Strom said it, and I think we need it, and that's the tax capacity. What happens in districts like mine that I represent is fewer people carry that investment rather than a higher density. And so the transparency process that Mr. Papp is alluding to is getting everyone involved, because we're going to have fewer people that have to cover this investment because they have larger parcels of land, whereas in a high-density district, you can have business after business after business, and the burden to the residential becomes smaller because the residential or the business side will pick it up. In our district, that's different because those farms pick up a large share of that, and then the residential has to pick up the other side of it, and not to mention the resort side. Or the cabin side, the folks that come up in temporary. So what happens is, and I hear this all the time, and this is why this bill, I can't support this bill, is the idea is there. What you're trying to do is right, and the school board should absolutely be fighting for this. And they're going to have to make sure that everyone in our district knows that and that they know the ramifications, whether you're a seasonal cabin resort or owner, whether how this is going to impact you in agriculture, because of that population density change. So, you know, the spirit of what you're trying to do, I'm absolutely there. However, the way we have to accomplish that in where I represent has to be different. And so there's the differences that we see on this bill. But always appreciate your good efforts in legislation.
Thank you, Representative Creshaw. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? Representative Bennett. Thank you, Mr. Papp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my question is actually for Mr. Strom, because your lesson was very good there. Is that okay, Mr. Chair, if
of
I
course.
Ask Mr. Strom?
Thank you, Representative.
So my question is, how are businesses impacted under that same, the lesson you gave us on the property taxes and farms, ag land is excluded? Do businesses pay a higher proportion of the property tax compared to, say, a regular homeowner or a farmer?
Mr. Strong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, on the referendum market value tax base, there's no class rate. So the value of the business, a $200,000 business, would essentially be paying the same as a $200,000 house. on the net tax capacity, the class rate for business is essentially twice that of the homes. It's two for the value of the property over $150,000. So on debt service levies, for example, the business is paying twice per the same dollar of value what the homeowner is paying. But on referendum market value, there aren't class rates for the homeowners or the business property, so it's that the same rate per dollar of value.
Representative Bennett?
Sure, thank you. And Mr. Strom, one more question, if I could. How often does the value of the property, I should probably know this but from my own home, but how often is that reassessed and does that change, say, during that 10-year period?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, the Minnesota system, and our property tax experts in our office could answer this more fully, but in Minnesota, the value of each parcel is essentially assessed each year. So valuation changes each year during the process. There's a timeline for how often the property has to be inspected in person, but essentially each year in Minnesota, value is reassigned as of January 2nd of the assessment year. So over the course of a 10-year referendum, the value of that property would be computed 10 different times.
Representative Bennett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm understanding correctly, the amount of the levy paid per parcel or business would change during those 10 years based on the property value.
Mr. Strong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, yes, it would change based on a couple of things, both the change in one's own value and also the change district-wide, as the referendum is specified as $1 per pupil. So growing tax base, perhaps district-wide, if you're growing slower or faster than that rate, you're going to be affected differently than your neighbors. So if your particular house grew in value quite a bit faster than some other parts of the district, you would be paying a larger share than you were earlier, because it's all based on value as a ratio to the total value at the time of the levy being certified.
Representative, right. This seems like a good time to call on the tax chair. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. You know, I've always wrestled with these type of issues, you know, on elections and so forth. And I remember years ago, for some of the veterans around the table here, when we started to have the votes on appointing county auditors and treasurers instead of electing them, I always initially voted against that because we're taking that right away from people to, you know, that we're voting for that. And then, you know, when you looked at kind of efficiencies in government, and no one, we passed these left and right, and no one seemed to really, it wasn't a big deal, and now I actually vote for those type mm-hmm. of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're dealing with this, these used to be referred to as excess levy referendums, because it was something out of the ordinary that you were doing. But now they're called, for the most part, operating referendum levies without the excess. And, you know, Mr. Johnson was talking about this is now, all of these are pretty much ingrained into the budgets now. You know, 14% in Anoka-Hennepin or whatever that is. So it's, and there's a number of reasons for that. It's cross-subsidy, it's funding, all these things. But no longer is this, what I'm saying is these operating referendums, it's changed. They're not the same as they were years ago. It's more of an operating thing. And so it becomes closer for me in the same things that cities and counties do. It's normal operating type of things. And to me, it also comes down to the students. Back in 2013, when we started that, and I forget what we call that, Mr. Strom, but that first $300 of levy that we gave to every school district without going to the voters. And I looked at that at the time, and out of our 340 school districts, 35 school districts did not have an operating referendum. And every one of those 35 school districts were in rural Minnesota, every single one. And so I don't know why they couldn't pass those. But what was important to me is that it was impacting students. Regardless of the politics or the tax base or whatever, those students were falling behind the rest of the state who, for one reason or another, could do the operating referendums. And so, for me, that overcame anything other concerns, is we're going to do this for the students, because I don't want rural Minnesota in that situation falling further behind. So we gave everyone the 300, and then that same year, the additional 424 on local option revenue was being put into place. So I've probably come 180 on this type of an issue. And, you know, one of the reasons also why voters, I think, had to go for operating referendums, why cities and counties didn't, is because in our state constitution, we have to have a uniform system of kind of financing for education. And if you let just anyone go kind of willy-nilly, you know, you'd have these great disparities by zip codes. And I think that's why you've got the cap on referendums, is the kind of keep that. And so I even think that's different. So it's important on the transparency. I've heard that part. And so, you know, the world's best workforce requires a public meeting of school districts to bring the school patrons together to talk about strategic plans and what they're going to do. And I think if we move forward with this, and it is the same amount, so, and we know the approval rating has been very, very high. I do agree with Representative Erickson. I do think there should be more public disclosure. I know at Dilworth Glen Felton, I don't know if this is state law or not, but when they do a change in policy, they have three readings. So they actually have three different times when they will address that policy. And maybe we do that. Maybe we look at what you do with the TNT process, where everyone gets a statement, and here's this meeting, we're going to do this and that type of thing. And maybe you, even if you do this, you shorten it from 10 years to 5 or 7 years. So there, you know, they'd have to come back more frequent. And so I think that the excess referendums are different than they were. It's not the first time that we have looked at moving things from what were elected to something other, appointed or that. And the bottom line, it comes down to students. That's back in 2013 when we looked at those 35 school districts that had zero on operating referendum, when the statewide average was $1,000 to $1,200. That creates huge disparities for students. And so I can support the concept of 116 if we increase the notification and bring people more into the process before that board would take that vote.
Representative Freiberg, do you want to respond at all? Okay.
I'm certainly willing to work with you as this moves forward. And those are some interesting ideas. I'd like to see how they would work functionally and just consult with the school districts. But I'm certainly open to considering something along those lines that makes sense. And I really appreciate your comments, Representative Chair Marquardt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Representative Detmer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is for Mr. Strom. You know, being away from the committee for a few years, I always seem to come back to you with some questions. But school boards can currently levy up to $724 without voter approval through a combination of the 300 per pupil board converted referendum and the 424 per pupil local optional ref. How many districts have those? How many districts in the state actually have that $724 operation levy?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I'll send you a list right after the hearing, but most do. As Representative Marquardt said, all of the districts now have at least the $300 of referendum authority. So a number of those still have it voter approved, as opposed to having done that through the board approval process. But all districts have at least $300 of referendum authority now. In terms of the $424 per pupil, it's the large majority that have that by board approval as well, but it's not 100%. There's a handful of districts that are less than 424. And I can send you a quick list right after committee. I don't know the exact percentage.
Representative Detmer? Okay. Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just wondering if you're going to support the governor's reverse referendum, which, Representative Freiberg, you could add to this bill.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Freiberg, any closing comments?
I appreciate the committee's consideration of this. You know, I haven't seen a bill implementing the governor's suggestions yet. I'm glad he's open to this concept. I'm not sure I like everything that's in there, but from what he's talked about, but certainly willing to consider it. And once again, I really appreciate the committee's consideration of this bill. I think it's a really important topic that will help our students.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Youakim renews her motion that House File 116 be held over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative Freiberg. You're off, and Representative Poston, is he? There he is. Please. Representative Poston, welcome to the committee. Thank you for your flexibility. Members and to the public, this got noticed a little on the later side, but Representative Kreisha, I want to thank you for your comfort in adding this and providing the opportunity for this bill to be heard before the committee today. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Representative John Poston. Good morning, Chair Dabney. Good morning, members.
I'm going to interrupt you. Representative Kreisha, would you like to move that House File 33 be held over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Now you may proceed, Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Thank you for hearing House File 33 this morning. House File 33 adds service cooperatives to the definition of governmental units for purposes of joint powers. Service cooperatives are made up of governmental units as defined in the Joint Powers Act. Governmental units include cities, counties, townships, school districts, etc. A little bit about the co-op in my area. Our co-op is Sourcewell, and we're blessed to have them up in our five-county area. Sourcewell does $3.5 billion worth of contract sales with municipalities, school districts, counties, et cetera, in 47 states and in Canada. And a great deal of the money that they bring back to Minnesota goes out into that five-county area where Sourcewell is. A lot of it goes into law enforcement efforts, education efforts, et cetera, and I'll let my testifier talk about that a little bit. But recently, we're looking to build a children's museum, and I will tell you that our buying cooperative, Sourcewell, has already stepped up and put $500,000 investment, into the children's museum. With that, I'll hand it over to the representative from Sourcewell, Dan Listow.
Mr. Listow, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Dan Listow with Sourcewell. Sourcewell is the service cooperative located in serving north central Minnesota, and we're located in Staples. Thank you. On behalf of Minnesota Service Cooperatives, thank you for your consideration and flexibility in hearing House File 33 this morning. I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank the House for passing and including this language in the supplemental budget bill last year. We're here again seeking your support for the bill. As Representative Poston stated in his introduction, House File 33 seeks to clarify that service cooperatives are included in the definition of government unit for purposes of the Joint Power Statute 47159. There are nine service cooperatives located all across Minnesota, and we serve the entire state. Service cooperatives were created by the legislature in the late 1970s as a unit of government to provide programs and services to governments and school districts all across Minnesota using collaborative and cooperative service delivery models. Service cooperatives are provided broad latitude in our enabling statute in the types of programs and services that we can offer. Just to give you some context as to what those look like, some common examples include education curriculum and professional development for teachers, training and certification courses for law enforcement, city and county officials, contracted services like planning and zoning and licensure functions, cooperative purchasing services, and shared service or shared time arrangements. The purpose of House File 33 is simply to provide clarity to our member governments that service cooperatives have the authority to utilize the Joint Power Statute. Because service cooperatives are not explicitly listed in 47159 currently, and because we have been using the existing established statutory framework of joint powers agreements to deliver services, we're seeking the clarification before you hear today in the bill. we believe that the clarity provided will allow us to better deliver on our statutory mission, which is to serve government and education all across Minnesota. We do not believe that the bill negatively impacts any group currently defined in the statute, and now through five committee hearings, three last session and two this session, we have not received any opposition testimony to the bill so far. With that, Mr. Chairman and members, thank you again for your support and consideration of House File 33, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Lustig. Representative Poston, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not.
Okay. Mr. Carlson is not here. All right. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or in opposition to House File 33? Mr. Heller.
Again, Rick Heller, an official representative of Twice Exceptional.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Heller, please testify on your comments on House File 33.
House File 33. As I mentioned before earlier in this meeting, as cooperatives become, if I understand this correctly, they're part of townships or cities and counties. Currently, there's a bill over in the Senate that gives $100,000 to admin. It's my belief that they will look at the accessibility law regarding content online. And as we know, school districts that use federal dollars have to follow 508. However, there's no monitoring process in place other than filing a complaint to the U.S. Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights. As we move dollars and create these cooperatives, we need to consider accessibility. There's a training they have called the three C's in Alexander, Minnesota every year, and it gets into Universal Design for Learning based on 508 and Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. When we consider the changed language now, we need to consider these cooperatives if they have to follow the accessibility law like school districts do. I would support the bill. However, because it does not get into the weeds of this, but the functionality with the public and civic engagement part of it, as most go on the internet, and as the legislature continues to add online, and that's what cooperatives do, need to consider this in the future. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify regarding House File 33? Seeing none. Representative Poston, do you have any closing words?
Chair Daphne, I have no closing remarks other than I would appreciate your support.
All right. With that, Representative Kreisha renews his motion that House File 33 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Representative Poston, have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, Chair Daphne, you as well.
Thank you. With that, reminder that we do not meet tomorrow, but if the National Weather Service allows, we'll be meeting in Windham on Friday. The bus leaves at 7 a.m. But I've got donuts, so it'll be all right. Thank you all, and with that, we stand adjourned.